Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How many times have you heard or even said something like this in Chicago? Be careful, that's not a safe neighborhood. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. While these warnings often come from a place of concern, they can also reinforce division, shaping how we think about certain parts of the city and ultimately the people who live there. It also creates a mental map of quote-unquote safe and unsafe areas, contributing to deeper segregation. And this has real-life consequences. Research has shown that segregation and years of disinvestment have led to a staggering 17-year gap in life expectancy between some neighborhoods on Chicago's north side and those on the south and west sides. A new book called Don't Go, Stories of Segregation and How to Disrupt It, explores how we as individuals can challenge the narratives that keep segregation alive in our conversations. We had the chance to sit down with the co-authors, Tonika Lewis-Johnson, a social justice artist and creator of the Folded Map Project, and Maria Creason, a sociologist at UIC. The book opens with reflections on where Tonika and Maria grew up. Maria started us off with her upbringing in South Dakota.
So I grew up in Brookings, South Dakota. The population was just under 14,000. And I looked up the statistics when I was writing this book to discover my impression that there were no black people there. There were three black people.
Three.
Three
okay.
Black people, yes. So it's a small town, small high school. I met new people from kindergarten all the way to graduating high school. Same people. Somebody moved in first grade and they always felt like they were the outsider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you. Small town. Exactly. Tonika, you didn't understand it at the time. But your elementary school friends, they weren't allowed to come to your house in Englewood because their parents said it's too dangerous there. And you talk about how this still happens with your child's friends. Mm-hmm. How does that feel?
Well, it's just really hurtful. And, you know, even me as a social justice artist, I do projects about the systemic issues. And this book forced me to talk about the personal ways in which segregation makes you feel bad.
Yeah.
And how it really does have the potential to make you question the value of your own neighborhood or if something is wrong with where you live. And yeah, it's just really hurtful.
It's a cycle though that hasn't been broken. So you're going through, you went through the hurt, your kids...
Yes, they've experienced it, and this is, you know, 20 years apart, and then, you know, for us to come to the point where we're doing this book even additional decade later, so, you know, it's just through our entire lives, and it was just time to use this as a way to help people make this large issue personal.
For sure. Well, let's dig in. You titled the book, as I mentioned, Don't Go, which I think is very powerful, and right to the point. So, Tonika, tell us more about how you interpret those messages when people say, don't go there, and how that's conveyed.
Oh, well, first of all, when people say don't go to the entire south side of Chicago or the west side of Chicago, one, it's coming from people who oftentimes have not even visited Chicago or have never been to the south side. And then it also... doesn't help people understand the fact that they're talking about half the city, not just a specific location. You're literally talking about half of the city, mm-hmm. Not even a specific neighborhood, not even a specific address. And so it's really inaccurate. And that's what people...
It seems really broad, right?
It's so broad
it's
that
like,
it's
well,
just
where can
not,
I live?
Exactly. It's so broad that it's just not factual. And so that's what... I was really excited for us to be able to just explain that to people. Like, one, it's just wrong, okay? And the reason that it's wrong is because it's so general and broad. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maria, as a sociologist, you've been studying how to break through the barriers of segregation for a while. But there was something different about the way that Tonika approached it. What stuck out to you?
Right. So I think that I'll give a little background. Like, I've studied segregation for decades and created my share of academic reports and calculated statistics. And I think you even at the start of it talked about the 17-year lifespan. You know, we hear those statistics. And I think it's really easy to distance ourselves from them. They tell us what to think, these numbers and these things like that, but they don't tell us how to feel and what to feel about it. And the statistics provide a really important message for all of us, and it's important to identify the problem.
Yeah.
But we don't personalize it. We can't see it. We don't feel it. Mm-hmm. And I think the book, what I really love about the book and I love about all of Tonika's projects is she makes us think and feel and understand and head towards empathy in a way that a statistical report can't do.
Mm-hmm. And you've said, thank you. I know, how sweet, right? Well, you know, on that same token, you say, Tonika, that you and Maria have twin brains, quote. So talk more about that relationship between the two of you and then how it informed the work on the project.
Well, first of all, I joke and I will say it here. We're both nerds. Okay. Just through and through.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. We both love to read. Obviously we're fascinated about segregation, how it was baked into our city, our country. We were both raised by people who were artists, creative. So despite how different our lives were, we have so many aspects of our lives that are similar. And I believe those similarities enabled us to work on something like this book so easily. Because clearly, even though our career trajectories are different, the through line is very similar. Mm-hmm. We want to disrupt this systemic issue. And we both believe that the way to do it is helping people see that it's personal. It's going to have to be, as Maria says in her book, people seeing the blind spots. And as I say in Folded Map, people coming together. So you can identify those blind spots because segregation, it limits your worldview. It mm-hmm. limits the experiences you have. It limits you from meeting people like Maria
right.
and I with each other. So,
I'm thinking about what you said earlier, just about the fact that a lot of this narrative comes from people who aren't even from here or maybe haven't even been to the city. And I think back, as I was telling my colleague Lisa earlier on air, that your book reminded me of my journey to Chicago, right? I come here from another state, but, you know, by way of another country, right? I'm Canadian. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I made the decision 4 years ago to take this job and move here, I was getting all kinds of messages, even from the people in Canada who, just from watching American television, right, which they have access to, were like, oh, you're moving to Chicago? The South Side? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to say at the time. I mean, I was still looking up houses. I was like, I don't know where I'm going to live.
Yes.
But how do you feel about the fact that it's crossed the border even?
Oh, gosh. I always use this example since we've been talking about the book. When I had the opportunity to speak about Folded Map in Bordeaux, France, and all of those people in the audience who were French from Bordeaux, when I said, you know, South Side, they all made the gun signal. It's like, oh, boop, boop, boop.
Yeah.
And so it's not just, you know, pervasive in our country. This is international.
Yeah.
And it's really a problem.
You're nodding, Maria.
Yeah, I think it's international. We have one of our storytellers is from China, and before she moved here, she was warned about where she would move when she came to Chicago. I also think for people who live in the areas of Chicago where people are not told don't go, I think we all have to remember that people outside of Chicago think the entire city of Chicago should be avoided. And so you can kind of map that out and realize
Oh, they think just avoid Chicago
avoid
altogether.
Avoid Chicago. I have a daughter who just started college on the East Coast. And when people find out she's from Chicago, they have a similar kind of reaction like, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Well, you examine how the role of fear, not just physical harm, but of doing something wrong, can reinforce segregation. So we're going to get into both. I want to start, though, with physical harm. We know the rates of gun violence in Chicago are startling, and it often, you know, keeps people away from certain neighborhoods and blocks even. So I want you to talk about how a young woman in your book named Alea, who had recently moved to Chicago, how she approached this.
Well, what's, I think, really special about her story is her upbringing and her interest that brought her to graduate school in Chicago really contributed to her understanding how problematic generalizations and assumptions are. Mm-hmm. And for her to have had the experience of gun violence in a neighborhood next to Chinatown when she was told, don't go to the South Side and that Chicago is dangerous. For her to understand that I was still just at the wrong place at the wrong time, mm-hmm, is such an insightful way to really contextualize what she experienced, because she knows that that location does not speak, or that incident in, right, that location is not, you know, she can't say that that's what's going to happen on the miles and miles, right, that make up the South Side.
And if I'm not mistaken, Alea was from somewhere else, right?
Yes.
And moved to Chicago for college, mm-hmm, and still had that mindset.
Exactly.
Right?
Still and had, she had didn't the, allow that experience to prevent her from getting to know other neighborhoods, locations on the South Side of Chicago, and even going back to that same place where the incident happened.
Mm-hmm. In Don't Go, you make the point that many white people get messages that it will be dangerous for them to visit a Black or Latino neighborhood, but that white people are often safer there than the Black and Latino residents. Can you break that down, Maria?
Yeah, I think you broke it down. I think it's, you know, really that storyline, and that needs to be told.
Yeah. I feel like that would surprise some people.
I'm sure it would surprise a lot of people. And I think that Tonika reflects, yeah, on that very poignantly. I want to kick it over to her.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and this is why segregation is so nuanced, because of this narrative and because of the over-policing of Black people in neighborhoods that are predominantly Black. If anything were to happen to anyone white, mm-hmm, in a neighborhood like my home neighborhood, Greater Inglewood, the heat that it would bring, the police surveillance, the inconvenience, the stopping of everyone, people don't want that. People don't want that. And so that is also the other aspect of, you know, why people who are non-Black and specifically white are actually safer, yeah, on the South Side. So contrary to what they are saying, the truth of the matter is segregation has still protected them in a way.
There's a shocker for some people.
Exactly. So that's, you know, one fact.
You break down where the Don't Go message originates. Now, in many cases, it's not based on the messenger's lived experience, but on perception. You spoke with someone who did receive a Don't Go message. This was based on lived experience. Talk about Danica's story.
Oh, yes. Well, first of all, her story is very similar to Tiana's. Those are the two Black women who represent being from Inglewood and the West Side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they experience, you know, people saying that in front of them. And these are the neighborhoods that they're actually from. So it was shocking to them that they actually were experiencing someone tell them that the neighborhood that they lived in is bad, mm-hmm, especially given the profession that Danica has. You know, she knew that it was problematic, and I believe social work. And she knows that in order to, you know, do the work and deliver this service, you can't have that mindset. So she was just completely shocked, yeah, that people in her profession actually thought this, like took that advice and was giving that advice to others because right. she just thought about how that's going to transfer over to the much needed services that they're providing.
I love the personal reflections throughout this book, Maria. How has it been received so far?
It's been awesome.
Oh,
it's been
yes.
really good. I mean, I think it's
you want to talk about it.
Hit on a chord of something that people want to talk about.
Start some conversation, doesn't it?
It's a conversation starter. Yeah.
Yeah. People are like, oh my gosh, we can say this. We can talk about this now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to just keep it a secret. You know,
I mean, you go right there with the title.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah.
Let's just get to it.
So I think it is useful to point out though, that, you know, we got a little bit of questioning when we were deciding whether to call the book Don't Go,
mm-hmm.
because the book ultimately has an optimistic thread to it,
right.
and it's a pushback against this thread. So people were like, oh, don't go. We're just going to read another depressing thing about how messed up things are in our city. And, you know, we're going to be demoralized like many students who take sociology classes are by the end because you're talking about all the problems.
But you ultimately decided to stick with it.
Stick with it because, like you said, it grabs you. It grabs your attention. It's like, oh, well, let me look at this. And then you see it's richer than that.
Yes. You talk about the fear of doing something wrong, as I teased earlier. Maria, can you tell us about Jerry's experience riding the bus from Hyde Park to Inglewood?
It's one of my favorite stories.
Yeah, yeah. So Jerry has an amazing story. I can't even capture all of the threads of it. But one of the things that he decided, he was a sociology graduate student at the University of Chicago, and he decided he was going to take on this message of don't go and was going to take a bus ride from University of Chicago, from his home to Englewood to go to a coffee shop. And he tells the story and reflects on how not just being afraid for his life,
mm-hmm.
but being afraid when he was the only white person on a bus with all black people of doing the wrong thing. You know, and I think it's a reflection of the power of segregation in this country. We've set it up so that there's so much discomfort and anxiety around so many layers of things, the violence, but also being embarrassed to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing or really hypervigilance, that Jerry was given, you know, the opportunity to see as a white person that many white people will never even have that thought process. And I think that was an interesting connection to Tonika's story because she sort of shared during the interview, I watched them as they shared the story of then what it was like when Tonika is the only black person on a bus on the north side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want you to share the story, Tonika, of going to Lane Tech High School and benefiting from being part of a diverse student body.
Yes.
Do you want to read a little bit from that passage?
I would love to. There were students with families from Puerto Rico, Philippines, Poland, Nigeria, Mexico, China, Haiti, Panama, Belize, Jamaica, and all over the world. This experience expanded my worldview, especially because we were just kids who weren't yet corrupted by the idea that we should know everything about each other or only socialize with our own kind. We were curious and we made mistakes. We learned how to talk to each other by talking to each other. All of us said something offensive at one time or another because we didn't know the right way to say something about another culture.
So in your view, what's the best way to take responsibility for a mistake?
Learn how to be corrected. And that was the huge takeaway from high school.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get corrected.
To be teachable.
Yeah. You know, just learn how to say what it is you think and accept the fact that it might not be right. And then just listen to someone correcting you, especially if they're correcting you with facts and from love for you to just know better. And the example that I often give is, you know, even me being a black girl from the South Side going to Lane Tech, who could tell you about my neighborhood, I still didn't culturally understand why Latinos were offended by the term illegal alien.
Mm.
And so I had to get taught that.
I'm sure you know now.
Yeah. And I knew immediately after they explained it to me. And yeah. So just learning how to listen and be corrected. And I think that's the most important part. Just learn how to be corrected.
Yeah. So we've got lots of stories from you two plus, you know, the interview subjects throughout this book. I mean, sum it up for us, Maria. In what ways or what other ways from what we've discussed here today can folks disrupt segregation?
You really want to ask an academic to sum it up real quickly? I think what I love about the book is that we have in our book social workers, piano tech repair, teachers, tech workers, engineers, small business owners, and each of them, what's so inspiring about the story is each of them come up with ways to do just that. So we have an Airbnb host who decided, for example, that he had a apartment on the west side that he rented out in a neighborhood people were told not to go. He would leave books showing people where to go visit on the south side, mm-hmm. right? We have a small business owner who decided that on the north side and decided that she needed to proactively find black and brown artists to have products in her store. And so she did that, right? Social workers who stop saying good and bad neighborhoods mm-hmm. and start realizing that things are contextualized and you can't do broad specs. You're all messengers. Mm-hmm. We have retail store clerks who realize they need to figure out how to answer questions from tourists about where to go in Chicago.
Lots of people taking matters into their own hands and just trying to spread a good message. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll leave it there. That is Maria Creason, who's a co-author with Tonika Lewis Johnson of the book Don't Go, Stories of Segregation and How to Disrupt It. You can find the book wherever books are sold. Tonika and Maria, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Micah Yasin. To make sure you never miss an episode, hit subscribe wherever you listen. Or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.